We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good afternoon and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein. The sanctuary state of California appears to be the left's model for a socialist government. Their legislature, centered in its capital, Sacramento. For decades now, the citizens of California have been taxed to death. They've outlawed plastic straws, given illegal immigrants a safe haven driver's license so they could vote. Major cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco are littered with homeless on the street, with tent cities popping up in downtown areas. We're seeing needle-free zones for drug addicts to shoot up. In a word, it's chaos. And in many regards, they're dictating how its citizens are required to live, behave, what they buy, etc. You know, some weeks back, I did a show with Tamika Hamilton and Deplorable Dave. Today, we want to go more into depth with Tamika. Tamika Hamilton is a 33-year-old Black conservative who is running for Congress in California 3 in 2020 to unseat the incumbent, John Garamendi. She was born and bred in Maryland and moved to California 3 years ago. She served in the Air Force for 16 years and is still a reservist. She's passionate, patriotic. She's married with 4 children, I believe. So welcome back, Tamika.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm really glad that I have a chance to bring you back. We touched on a lot of things, but today I'd really like to get into more depth. You know, I heard through the grapevine that your campaign is gaining traction. How are things going?
So right now, the social media front is like the big thing I'm pushing just to get my name out there. I am gaining a lot of traction. Just last week, I think I gained like 2,500 followers. It was pretty crazy. It's been pretty crazy. I will say that my usage of social media before this has been really minimal. And when I say minimal, I'm like minimal, excuse me, it's not existent.
Okay.
So this year. So the beginning of this year, you know, I said, okay, I'm just going to go full force and try this thing out.
When you consider how President Trump uses it, it says quite a bit.
I know.
You really, you've gained a lot. I've seen some of the numbers, and it's really important because it's a, you know, one of the things that's going on, as you know, is suppression. And there's also talk about deregulation, breaking up the big tech. And there's an upside and there's a downside. You know, the upside is, well, it will free up conservative voice. And the downside is if you break it up, you know, it's possible that it may get worse. So we have to be very careful. What is your feeling about free speech?
That it shouldn't be a fringe upon. It's, I mean, the Constitution is clear. And for a private company using a public square, however you want to call it, and then making up their own rules that are stifling free speech, they don't go together. And you know, we can get, you know, people want to get into the weeds of it, but this is the Constitution. They are making money off the American people with their company, and they should just follow the law of the land. I don't know why that's so difficult unless you are intentionally trying to control the people and control the narrative and appease certain groups. That's how I look at it.
Well, you know, part of it has to do with not being able to sue the platform.
No.
In other words, I agree with you that it's supposed to be a platform. where they're really separated from directing political traffic, so to say. So if you're in a free platform, it's kind of like anything goes, you know, one way or the other. But when you start acting like a, quote, publisher, then they can be sued. So it's a slippery slope. Like, for example, if the New York Times said something slanderous against you, you could sue them because they're a publisher and they could be held accountable for what they say, what they write. But if you're a neutral platform, then they just say, well, sue the person that said it, but it's not us, you see. So it's a very tricky thing. They were given these exemptions. I don't know what code it was under the law, but all the big platforms, you know, were within this exemption. And that's really where it centers. But I would be very cautious to break up what they're doing. I think it could actually get worse.
Right.
Tell us a little about California 3 in terms of the geography, so our listeners know where you're running. What are the boundaries? What's the overall district in California 3?
Okay, so District 3, the counties are, and it's a little bit of West Sacramento. It's the West Sacramento is involved, and I say that because when you look at the map, West Sacramento isn't added when they draw the line, but West Sacramento is part of it, and it's Yolo, it's Yuba, it's Sutter, Glen, Lake, Solano County, and it's four of my counties have voted red, and the district is considered purple.
Okay. And in terms of 2018, how did the numbers fall out in Garamendi's favor that you can recall?
So his, he won by 59%, and Charlie Shop was 41%.
Okay. Is that considered a landslide?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because when you look at the numbers, you know, it doesn't seem, because it's less than 6 out of 10, right? So it's 60, like kind of like 60-40. How can you get it to 50-50? Is there enough demographics within, well, maybe I should just ask you that. What is the demographic breakdown, let's say by race, you know, that you're aware of in the district?
So it's 64% white, 10% Asian, 6% black, and 1.3% Native American. And then it's 28% Hispanic.
Okay. So it's considered a purple district. So there's hope.
Yes, there is hope.
And have you had any kind of rallies yet that are starting? I mean, I know we're talking 2020, you're running in 2020, but time is moving so fast.
I know.
Right? That every day you delay doing something is like it multiplies. So we've got about like 17 months. So have you started any rallies? Have you been part of anything yet that's getting stirred up?
So I just attended over on Friday the rally at the Capitol in regards to this voting law that they're trying to push here in California to take the president off the ballot. Myself, Aaron Cruz, and there were a few other speakers that were there, and to include Angel Moms. And one of the things that is that it's so interesting because Jerry Brown, he vetoed this bill because, you know, requiring tax returns is not a law.
Correct.
So to take the tax, so saying that a president needs to have 5 returns that the public can see, or we're just going to take you off the ballot. Like, that's ridiculous. And so the hypocrisy is astounding. And the rally was really informative, and I got to meet a lot of great people. And I hope that people, their eyes are on what's happening here in California, because they're trying to set a precedence for the rest of the country, like they always do. But this one right here is just nothing but short of tyranny, trying to make the decision for the people. And so I mean, obviously, I highly disagree with the decision to try to push this law, but we'll see what happens.
How would you say that the national narrative has affected your campaign?
People want me to defend being a conservative person. People want me to defend Donald Trump, and he's already the president. And so I don't need to defend him. 63 million votes defend him. And my job is to speak to you from my platform, my views, and how I support the president for sure. But I am in no way, I'm going to be a conservative woman regardless of who the president is.
Right.
And so it's just really sad because, you know, people want to challenge me because I am a Black woman running on a conservative ticket. And it's like, oh, how dare you, kind of. But
are you serious? How dare you?
You know,
as if your voice doesn't matter, that they try to pigeonhole people. And that's been part of the problem, probably in the last 8 to 10 years, 8 years of Obama, and then the last 2 years of the Trump administration. It seems that's one of their strategies, is to pigeonhole. How dare you, as a Black woman, be conservative? Like, what? Conservatism has nothing to do with race. It's about philosophy, right?
I agree. And my thing is this, you know, you got to vote with your conscience. And one of the things that I do when I go talk to people, potential voters, I don't even want to say it like that. My thing is I go talk to people, and yes, I do. I want to target voters as well, but there are people that simply don't vote. And I have talked to them as well. And I just tell them, I listen first, and then we talk about what I believe in, if that comes into question. Because, you know, especially here in California, people are just so tired of the hate that comes from both sides. Yes. Or just the misunderstandings, or just the politics in general. So, you know, sometimes it can be hard because, you know, the emotions are high. But I was able to turn a diehard liberal Berkeley resident at a gun show. And so I know that there is hope. But, you know, I just listen. And, you know, I tell them I'm conservative. And then it's like, oh, it's almost shocking. But it's because the narrative that the mainstream media pushes their views of their opinions on conservatives makes people think that we're all the same, or the things that they say are hateful are true by everyone, and that's not the case.
So it sounds like you try to take a more humanist approach.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Because people just want to be heard. People want to be heard, and they're getting drowned out with noise, in my opinion.
Yes. And when there's noise, when you're hearing a lot of noise, it's actually very hard to listen. In other words, that's what it seems like. That distraction is the strategy of the left nowadays. In other words, if you just have noise coming from 10, 15, 20 different directions, nobody hears anything. It's like the old Yogi Berra expression. There's so many people talking, I couldn't start a conversation. You know, something like that. So you take a humanist approach where you're not trying to really identify yourself, but to talk about openly about issues and have that dialogue. That dialogue seems to be gone in this country because people are so polarized one way or the other. So you're not necessarily trying to jump on the Trump bandwagon, are you?
What does that mean?
Well, it means that you're running a campaign that's going to be similar in scope to what the president is talking about. That's what I mean by jumping on the bandwagon. It's like he's the leader, and then people that are running for office on a conservative or Republican ticket are kind of like going to have the same kind of philosophical basis. Now, what I'm saying is you may have some of that, but you're really trying to run more of, I say, a humanistic campaign. That's what I mean.
Okay, because I support Donald Trump. I support our president fully, and I think that one thing that people, I think the military is such a fine example in the terms of supporting leadership, because you know we support the president regardless of the party affiliation. We want the mission to succeed. And so people from all backgrounds must work together in order for that to be accomplished. And so when, and while I have my own personal opinions and, you know, a lot of the things that I believe in are based on factual issues, you know, that we can go and look and say, okay, I see this, and hear the numbers. And then with the president's agenda, I support him. And I think that I don't think we should shy away from that, especially as candidates, but we also should also tell our views as well.
Yes.
And then if we don't agree with the president, that does not turn into a bashing contest. What that means is that we have a solution my thing is, why be negative towards the leader of a country that wants to help Americans? I will never understand that. And so that's why I go back to, you know, looking at how the military approaches things and are able to, even if we don't agree with our leadership, that's not going to stop the boat. We still got to keep going.
Well, right. I mean, you know, just because you don't agree with something, it doesn't mean you don't do your job.
Exactly.
Okay. And there's a time and a place. That's why I always get upset, like at the NFL or even the you know, the women's World Cup soccer team, that they don't respect the flag. They won't sing the national anthem. Mm-hmm. They look frigid, frozen, upset, emotionless. When it really, you know, I mean, it's our country. I mean, there's such a divide between patriotism. There's such a wedge that's been driven so deep. And we're really tired of it because we don't see constructive ideas coming from the Democrat or the left or the progressives. We see pie in the sky, trains to anywhere across the ocean. We see, you know, automobiles vanishing in the Green New Deal. I mean, we see all of this, but there's nothing really concrete. Can you think of a constructive proposal that's come in California that is really helpful to the people?
You're trying to give me a trick question. No.
It is a trick question.
It is. No, there isn't. And
That's it.
There isn't.
I mean, allowing the illegal immigrant to get health care, for example, is what means that anybody can come to California, anyone from anywhere. The whole world could come to California, technically. And we never put the brakes on. It's like imagine heading to the cliff that has it all border fenced off and you just run right through it. You know, there's a point where you got to put the brakes on for your own safety. And it doesn't appear as a state, as a sanctuary state, they're willing to put the brakes on in any way, shape, or fashion. We're going to take a brief break.
Patriots. Through his widely acclaimed poetry books, The Trump Chronicle, Ray Ray has preserved for us these historic events that have surrounded the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. His fervent and patriotic poems capture in real time what could have easily been lost or forgotten. The Trump Chronicle is available on Amazon or through the America Out Loud bookstore. Pick up a few of these memorable books for your library. They are a must-have for our MAGA movement. Let's support this important patriotic poet and show host so we can continue to read history through poetry.
Tamik, I want to ask you about your campaign strategy. And if you could, you know, maybe give us some points that are important to you as you start to strategize 2020.
Okay, so let's do the points first. Homelessness, that is a really hot issue here in California, as everyone knows, that the whole world knows. And, you know, and one thing, let me say this first, is that I don't know everything, and I don't have, and I will tell you right now that I have a great group of people that are helping me with this campaign. Good. And I don't think that it's right or fair to ever act like, you know, this is like my own thing. You know, mm-hmm. I'm okay. just a representative, and my goal and my, not my goal, but who I am, I'm just going to represent the people and what they want voiced in there in this district. And so homelessness is a hot topic here for sure. I mean, it's like a no-brainer. And one of the things that I want to do is focus on the mental health and the drug use, and the fact that there are no, there is no space for men. A lot of the people that we see on the streets are men, and the homeless shelters that we have available are overcrowded. So that's why you see them. And obviously there's some people that just don't want to be there for sure. But yes. But also there's the space we need. In Sacramento, they announced, like, I think a month ago, that they purchased hotels. And so we'll see how that pans out and how that helps the situation. But the mental health is the first thing that we should be tackling, because they did get one from my reading and talking to people that come way before me, is that when in the Reagan era, he got rid of the mental institutions. And while there were bad things, and from what I've read and what I've been told, is that, you know, that was what was being done was a lot of things being done wrong, were done wrong. And that's why that was what made the decision for on his part to get rid of them altogether. But I think that we're in a different time now, and we have so many, we can have so much oversight that it would be good to bring something back that people can, that are in these situations and they're mentally unstable. They have a place to go and they're being cared for. And the second issue that I would want to talk about, or not, excuse me, talk about, but find a solution for, is balancing a budget here and nationwide. I think this thing where these big ideas and having, like, what's your shiny new thing? I think that I don't have any shiny new thing. I want to take care of what we have going on now. Where's the money going now? And then the people need to know, taxpayers need to know where their money is going. Are they going to, are people getting grants and funding that's irresponsible? And, or, you know, where can we cut back? You know, those kind of things. My thing is, like, let's have a balanced budget. Let's look into where every area of where taxpayer money is going into, because I don't trust the government. I don't.
Look, I mean, look at the high-speed train. Look at the amount of money that is consumed. Imagine if they could even take 20% of that and build some shelters. You know, nutrition is so important to mental health, correct?
Yes, that is true.
You know, you have to eat right to think right. It's mm-hmm. just the way it is. Anybody that's hungry can't think. The body needs good, solid nutrition. Now, a lot of these people, are we seeing a lot of veterans on the street?
11,000 veterans in California.
Okay, so it's pretty high. And so a lot of the veterans, you know, can't get what they need out of the VA because it's just not structured that way. I mean, they come home from serving our country and that's basically they're abandoned and they end up on the street. Now, I've been to both San Francisco and Los Angeles in the last few years, but it was very obvious in Los Angeles. I could really see all the tent cities. And, you know, as soon as they get to such a decrepit point, then they move them out and they just resettle somewhere else and then they clean it up and they're somewhere else. So it's just, they're shifting the tent cities, but they're not, you know, solving any problems. You know, it's like bailing out a boat. that's sinking. You know, they keep bailing water out, but you got to fix the boat. And it seems like in California, the priorities are, like you say, the future, but not really now. You know, and this high-speed train is a glowing example of that, that they're thinking about transportation for the next 50 years. But what about what's happening right now? So so the homeless, mental health, feeding them. What else is important in your district to straighten out?
Voting. The voting issue. You know, we can argue all day about the numbers, but one person voting illegally is wrong.
I agree.
So it's, you know, I don't know why these, like, okay, I don't know. I can never understand why this issue or any issue where American sovereignty is in question would cause people to pause that are lawmakers. If there are, like I said, it doesn't matter if it's 1,000 to 1. If there, we need to purge, we need to look into it. We need an HR, we need an oversight, something, somebody, and do it now. And I, California and the leadership, they're not leaders, they're lawmakers and representatives. They should be ashamed of themselves when they are not putting American interests ahead of their agenda.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I can't even speak, because it really makes me so angry that people turn into politics, and this should never be the case. And allowing the thought of illegal aliens to creep into the minds of Americans, it makes them feel powerless. And you know, this is part of the game. You know, people feel powerless, and then what happens? People don't vote. And then people say, oh, they're going to do anything they want anyway. That should not be the case. That should, like, no American should feel that way.
You're right.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. You're right. There gets a reluctance to speak up. And that's what we're really talking about, is nobody is really challenging the Congress on this laissez-faire attitude. No, it seems so simple to protect your sovereignty as a nation. Every country does it. We're like the only one that just, there is no rule of law. And they make it into a divisive issue over immigrants. It's not about immigrants at all. Really, it's about power and control. Because we're already letting in 1 million people annually legally, but the illegal side of it, what is so difficult about having a secure border? What's the problem with a secure border? I don't get it. Do you? I mean, you come from a military background, right?
Yeah.
And that had a big impact on your life, I'm sure. Tell us about how that's prepared you for Congress.
You know, sometimes you have to make difficult decisions in order to bring back order and to show that we are looking at every single thing. Sometimes you have to make difficult decisions. And sometimes, well, right now we're seeing that people don't want to do that because they're with it virtual signaling, is that what they call it now? Because they want to talk about feelings and they want to, you know, they claim they want to get to the heart of the matter. And you know what? We can't save everybody. We can't. We cannot save everybody. But what we can do is if you liken it to a boat that's sinking, we need to patch the hole. And in the Air Force, being in the Air Force active duty 14 years, and now I'm on the reserve side of it, you know, working on my 20, is that I've seen my leadership make difficult decisions that weren't popular. But as we went, as we moved forward, we began to see that light at the end of the tunnel and understood why they had to do what they needed to do. And because Congress, the leaders, the lawmakers in Congress, the representatives in Congress, they are using this emotional war the culture right now is emotional. That's what it is. And they're playing it like a fiddle. And you can't, everyone's eyes are not going to be open, and I get it. But one thing that I always say is that, you know, even if you don't agree with everything I say, you can't ignore that something is wrong in Congress. And also the very things that you want to agree with them on, like, for example, let everybody in and let everybody vote, and or don't let Donald Trump be on the ballot, for example. What if one day your child doesn't agree with you or doesn't agree with the masses, and then that right is taken away? How would you feel that you can't protect your child and their thoughts? I mean, you can't make a decision, an emotional decision, because it's just a temporary feeling. It's just a temporary thing. And if you don't like the president, then do your hardest to get people to band together and vote against them. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's all you got to do.
I've been saying that for over 2 years, that if you don't like President Trump, vote him out. But instead, they manufacture these, you know, fake solutions like, well, if he doesn't give his tax returns, take him off the ballot. Well, he's not going to be president forever, is really what you're saying. So you can't set a precedent like that, because it could be you next. You know, they don't like you. That's a reason to impeach you. You're talking about emotion. But all people really should be focusing on is he getting the job done? You may not like him. A lot of things he says I don't like. I mean, there were things he said about John McCain that I didn't like. Even though McCain is, you know, not been the cleanest person, but I didn't like the comment that Trump made years ago about, well, you know, POWs, they didn't know what they were doing. They got caught. You know, that was not very nice. But I look at the overall, the guy is like alone. There's got to be enough support for you if it's already a purple district. So what can you do to appeal to that base and get, if you get closer to 50%, you really have a shot, don't you?
Oh, definitely.
So definitely. How do you get another, it was 59 to 41. So it's somewhere about another 9% in the middle. So you come up 9, he goes down 9, and you're in a dog fight. How do you get the other 9%?
So one of the things that I think we all can agree on is that the average person, I shouldn't say average because we're not average, but we want to be able to take care of our family if we have one. We want to be able to have food. We want to be able to put food on the table. We want to be able to have freedom to do what we want when we want. And we don't want to be overtaxed. We don't want to groan at the gas pump. We want to be able to drive on the road safely. There are so many things that are happening here in California, whether you're on the left or right. And when we're talking, if we're just talking about the left, and I list those points right there, I will do and fight my hardest to bring a light to this and do whatever I can to change this. And if I am not able to change it, I'm going to let you know who is in the way of changing it. The average person just wants to live free. And that is what's coming against the people of California. Forget ideologies. Forget if you don't like the president. We have a problem here, and we need to sound the alarm. And the average comforts are being exploited and put on the line. And people have to see that for what it is, regardless if you are on the left or right. And so that's my thing. You know, I, like I said, I don't know everything, but I will fight for you. And I will let you know who's in the way of that. Because we're just talking about us being, we are Americans. Regardless, we are Americans. And we should be fighting for Americans, not agendas.
Yes. What do you think AOC is attracting so many young people across the country? Why is she a role model?
So, did you see the documentary?
I haven't.
Okay. Check out the documentary, Knock Down the House. I mean, they featured other women, but it was so it, mainly it was featured her. But I think to answer your question, she's there. The media is putting her in our face every single day, one, and so they think that this emotionally charged culture is, it's attractive. They think that she's looking out for their best interest, and when you see, and she's that's something that the media is putting her out there like some, like a Democrat socialist vigilante. She's talking about all the issues that mean something to you, but the real solutions aren't there. And people that are ill-informed are, they're just looking at the fact that she's kind of been able to just stay and do whatever she wants to do, and that is attractive right now. That's like my, that's the only thing I really can think of is just like, this whole thing where I'm gonna tell it like it is, and da 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 da, like it's all, that's all that this is. It's all, in my view, it's just a show.
It's all talk.
And
It's just a show.
yeah, it's just a show, and it's entertaining, and that's what a lot of people forget. This is entertaining. Like Donald Trump, this is entertaining. It's entertaining. Some of the things he said, he does it because he knows it's going to rile them up. And they are using, that's AOC, she's their version on the Democratic side.
Yes.
It's entertaining. And that they think she's sticking it to them. And really? I mean, 17 times she voted against the funding to help expand and improve the quote unquote concentration camps, right? She 17 times she didn't voted no. So how is she really helping? How is she really supporting those children down there? So it's like you got to look at that kind of stuff. And the we're not looking, we got to look at what they're voting on. If you voted 17 times against getting that funding approved, do you really care?
They don't. They
Right, so
don't.
right
It,
now,
they don't. They don't care. I mean, we're in an untenable situation. They're coming into the country illegally. They're jumping the fence. They're being detained by law. As it is, you can't hold them more than what, 20 days, 21 days. In that time, they're fed, they're bathed, they can go to the library, they can seek legal advice. On the country's nickel, and to compare it to a concentration camp, I mean, I was livid with that comparison. And the whole Congress is just sitting there with sitting on their hands. They know there's a significant problem and they won't budge. And then they make it an emotional issue. All you're saying is, where are the facts? What are you voting on? And on that note, we'll take a short break.
spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Tamika, any debates that you anticipate into the start of the campaign through the next 17 months?
Oh, I anticipate debates. I welcome talking with him and in the audience about the issues that are happening in this district. Definitely.
Do you think he would accommodate that, or is he more like an invisible creature right now?
Oh gosh, is that a creature? I hope not. I hope he welcomes it.
Good.
And because that's what the people deserve. These are voters. They deserve to know who is representing them and what their views are and what their platform is and how they can be involved in the process because it's their power. It's the people's power. It's not mine.
You know, I want to change focus and talk a little about, your background. You grew up on the East Coast in Maryland.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little about, your growing up, your schooling and, And where you started to get a little bit of an itch to get involved in politics. I know Maryland is in the shadow of D.C., right? So tell us about your background growing up.
Okay, so I'm born and raised in Calvert County, Maryland. And if people are familiar with that, they might know Chesapeake Beach, Solomon's Island. Annapolis is not too far from me. D.C. is about another 45 minutes, depending on how you drive. My mother was a single mother. She had, you know, four kids by the time she was 21. Okay. I'm the only child for my father. But my parents were kind of Rolling Stones, and my grandparents, my grandmother Nellie, my grandfather Francis, and my grandmother Geraldine, they did the brunt of raising me. I say me because my mom, the other children she had were by another gentleman. And but anyway, you know, like I was raised like by my grandparents, and we always lived with a grandparent. So shout out to all those grandparents out there that are raising kids. And I'm so grateful for that. You know,
there are a lot of grandparents raising children throughout the country.
Yes.
Lots. I mean, you know, the family is so critical to a healthy growing up. And, you know, that's good that you had that love and a caring from a grandparent, because they have a lot of experience. There's nothing they haven't seen. I'm sure you could sit there and, you know, go over some stories that she would tell you, you know, about this country. So you grew up in Maryland. You went to high school in Maryland also?
Everything in Maryland.
Okay.
I didn't get in. I enlisted in the Air Force at 17, turned 18 in April, and then I left in July, and I was in the military ever since.
What did your grandmother say when you told her that you were going to join the Air Force?
It was expected. My grandfathers were Army.
Okay.
So it was kind of expected, you know. I mean, it wasn't expected, but it was not a shock. So they were fine with it. It was like, get out of here, go experience the world. And there wasn't anything at that time for me. There wasn't any options, you know. It wasn't like I had some, you know, a trust fund, or there wasn't any money laying around to pay for school. And I didn't want that option either.
I mean, we're talking about so much student debt, you know, around the country that, I mean, it's a viable option. I mean, other countries, for example, Israel, you're required to serve your country, you know, and here it's like, well, I grew up, when I was 18 years old, there was a draft lottery. So there was a draft, you know, and I'm not talking about a chilly breeze through a window or a beer or, you know, an NBA draft. I mean, it was conscription to join the military. And in Israel, you're required by law to serve in the military. That doesn't mean that everybody does, because they allow exemptions, and if you really don't want to, or you're too radical, they won't let you in. So you chose to enlist in the Air Force. And where were you based? Did you go out to Colorado Springs? What happens when you get drafted? When you, you know, go into the Air Force? Where did you start?
So you go to basic training. You start in San Antonio, and then from there. Like right before, so you started San Antonio basic training, and then you go to tech school. My tech school just so happened to be in San Antonio as well. And I did that after, I think I was like maybe 5 months, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, because that was a long time ago. And then my first base was Spengdahl in Germany. And then after that, it was Langley. And my mother, she had cancer. And I was able to get a humanitarian assignment to Bowling Air Force Base. And so I was there for some time, and that's in D.C. And then after that, I got another special duty assignment working with the Navy. And then I did another special duty assignment at Andrews. And then my last duty station was here in California. So that's how I came to.
That's how you ended up in California. Were you already married to your husband? And did you, you know, when did you meet him? And, you know, you have how many children? Is it four?
Yes. Yeah, so we're a blended family. I have a son from my starter marriage. I call it starter marriage. I was 19. And so I was 19. And that's all I'll say about that. But I have a beautiful 15-year-old son. And then I met my real husband. His name is Ray. And we met.
Great name, you know,
great name. Not Raymond.
Just
not
Ray.
Raylan. It's just Ray.
Just Ray.
It's just Ray. People want to be, they want to add everything to it. It's just Ray. And I met him when I was stationed at Bowling Air Force Base. He was in the Navy as well, but he's a police officer. And he was when I met him, he was literally about to go into the academy for Metro PD. And then I got orders here, and by the grace of God, he was able to get a lateral at a police department here. So he didn't have to start over again. So we're very fortunate.
How much of your faith enters into, you know, your day-to-day life and your decision-making on, you know, political issues, family issues?
My belief in, you know, God is, oh gosh, now you want me to like get all emotional.
No. I know, it's okay. You know, it's an emotional issue because, you know, talking about faith has almost become taboo in our country right now.
Yes.
And thank God for President Trump, who gets up at the podium and says the things that it can bring tears to your eyes. That's how emotional it is. Not from a political standpoint, but from a relief that someone is actually saying something from the heart and not their agenda. So I'm glad that you feel that emotion, because that's what appeals to a lot of our base, believe it or not. Everybody laughs at it. But our base, we believe in faith, has a big part of this, doesn't it?
For me, you know, and I want to just say that, I want to answer your question, but, you know, I want to give a little bit of context, if that's okay.
Sure.
You know, my mom, she was never able to, like, get it together is the best word I can say without making it sound like my mother wasn't a horrible woman by any standards, but, you know, we were not given the love and attention that children needed. Especially in those crucial periods of growing up. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that God, Jesus, separated me from so many things that I could have easily fallen to, because it would have been like, oh, well, I get it because your mom did this or your mom did that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you enough, and I will not stress enough, that who I am, who I've grown to be today, is because Christ saved me. And it brought me to this place to understand that, you know, there, he gave me a voice. And I always tell people that, you know, if somebody had stood up for me and looked out for me, that I could have had, while I don't have a terrible life now, but we went through a lot of things that children shouldn't go through. But if somebody had looked out for me, I could have been a 10 times, million times better. And, you know, if I'm thinking that way, you know, but that's what is driving me to do this, is because we are being forgotten here in California. Mm-hmm. And to the point to where people feel like California's dead, it's gone, it's a lost cause. But then I always say to people, how can we abandon a state? How can we abandon anything here in America? We have to fight back.
Redacted.
You know,
yes,
and so my thing is to stand in that gap, because because I understand, I've been there. No one stood in the gap for me, and I don't need to know everything to know that something is wrong and something needs to change. And I'll learn anything. I have 16 years of experience of learning something new all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's about standing in that gap, And, you know, and when God sends you, he'll provide. And so I'm sorry, I just want to give a little bit of context. You know, it's just because sometimes when we talk about faith and give that quick sound bite, it's so much more to it than just that. And I can't, you know, it's
Well,
only an hour
thank
segment,
you.
but yes.
Thank you. Thank you for expressing it the way you did, because it was very moving. It is moving. And that's what we need. We need leaders. You know, a couple of times during this conversation, you've stopped short at saying that they were not leaders, they were elected officials or legislators, lawmakers. What is your definition of leadership?
Oh gosh.
Because that's what we're talking about here, aren't we? I mean, they never talk about Trump in terms of his leadership skills because they're afraid of it. Because leadership is about duty. It's not about agenda. It's not about personal gain. I mean, by God, he gave up a $1 billion lifestyle that any of us would be like, sayonara, I'll see you in Hawaii. Why would you give that up unless there's a higher calling of leadership and duty and country? Does that ring true for you?
Yes, it does ring true for me. And, you know, leadership to me is someone that sees something that needs to be done. And instead of, you know, chatter and instead of griping and complaining about it, they decide to take that spear and go forward, you know, and have authority over a situation. And right now we're not seeing that in some of the people that are in elected positions. And it's unfortunate. But again, that's when it goes back to the people and the people realizing that they have the power, that they are the ones that really can control this shit. You know, it's not me. You know, it's not me. It is you giving me a position to do what needs to be done. And I just really hope that people that are listening, especially those that possibly aren't registered to vote, register to vote. Exercise your power. The Constitution has given it to us. You know, it's for the taking. And don't just sit back and just talk about it. Do it. You know, make those sacrifices. You know, do like a registration party. I don't know, but do something because it is your power. It's not their power.
You know, sometimes people forget how powerful their vote is. I mean, you take a look, and I think we've talked about this before, but I'll mention it again for the new listeners, that even though you may live in a red state or a blue state, let's call it a blue state, like California is a blue, call it a blue state, and you might live in a blue district. In your case, it's kind of purple, but let's say it were blue. And so people think, oh, well, why should I even vote? It's a blue state or it's a blue district. Well, that's not how it works, does it? Because if you win your district, you go to Congress, correct?
Yes.
So if we start thinking locally and we concentrate locally as you are in your district, that's how we can win back the Congress to get. I mean, I think we should all be more centrist anyway, right? We should be looking out for the benefit of the country and not whether you're red or you're blue. But under the current circumstance, in each area, if you could turn towards the best ideas that affect the country, that should help you win an election. Will you have a method of funding your campaign? Tell us
So,
about what the plans are so that we can help you. And when this gets to a podcast, Tamika, we can embed that information. So as soon as you have a good read on that, please let us know.
oh, I already have
What's
it.
happening now with funding?
So right now with funding, it's the link is on my bio, on my Twitter, and on my Instagram. And so you just click it right under there, and then you know, it's right in my bio, so you can click it and donate to the campaign. Because right now, my husband and I are pushing this train. And I will tell you that we don't have a backup. There's no mom. There's no dad. We don't have family. My grandmother's the only one left.
Okay.
And she has, and so,
so you need us. You need us.
I do. But this is going to take a national effort. You know, this is going to take a national effort because California, even though I'm in California, right? California is trying, they have always attempted to try to set an example for the rest of the world, the rest of the nation. And people around this country need to let California know that they're watching and that they are going to support people that want to support the nation. I want to support the nation. I want to support my district. And so I just ask people across the country to see me, to see what's happening here and say, you know what? Let's do this and let's come together. Because the Democrats, they have Act Blue. They have been able to strategize and come together, and that's how AOC got elected.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they already had a team. I'm forming my team. They already had a team waiting for it. That's why I tell people, look at Knock Down the House. If you can stomach watching her talk, great, and I will applaud you. Watch the documentary because it tells you a playbook. And they already had a team ready. The Republicans, I can only say for what I know, is that's not the case. So, you know, we have to, and I met Dinesh, 2 weeks ago in Napa, and he was talking about the exact thing, about how we as Republicans have to use different tactics. And so, yes, please donate to my campaign, and so we can take back California and go district by district.
Well, Tamika, I really want to thank you for coming on and getting to know you better, where you sit, how you think, where you came from, and what you're trying to do. It's positive. I think your message is going to be appealing. If there's anything we can do on the America Out Loud Network, let us know. You know, there is a lot of people that are very plugged in politically that are commenting, that are writing essays, in my case, a poem here or there, that could help the overall cause. So, you know, if you felt like you wanted to deliver an essay or something, you know, let us know. We have a media player that's second to none at theamericaoutloud.com. You could click on all sorts of commentary, and there's a lot of focus on California. You're right. California is like, everybody's looking at California, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But I want to wish you the best. You've got all the right stuff, as they say. So good luck to you, Tamika. Let's keep in touch, and we'll get you back on as we move through the process of the next 17 months again, and you'll fill us in on just what's going on. So on that note, let me just say, love Ray Ray and a poem.